This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from East End Backyard, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Crate.
Baytown, and hey, how we doing? Welcome to the East End of downtown, Edo, as they like to call it, as we are in the backyard, literally, in Edo, as we celebrate Fred Fowler and celebrate Friday and get you into your weekend here on the Press Box. Patrick Creighton's next to me, my man Aaron Raybould, who did all kinds of bells and whistles to get us on the air. Tyler back at the studio as we get things started. Fellas, what's going on? How's everybody?
Man, this is my first time out here. I think it might be my first time that I've actually gotten this far into the east side and, you know, to go someplace.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool. I can totally see how this is a Fred joint.
Oh, for sure.
This is, you know, it's a huge outdoor area. I was telling Aaron, I said, I'm really glad that I upgraded to a bigger car and not the smaller car, because grass parking lot, my small car probably would not have gotten through there. But this is a great location. There's a lot of space. I like that it's all outdoors. Of course, you got the umbrellas and everything to give you shade. There's a couple trees, and you go inside. They got a couple of bars, not just one, but a couple of bars inside. So this is a pretty cool spot, man. I could totally see why Fred makes this his
place. Let's be honest.
Place.
You can say all you want. It's because it's within walking distance of his crib.
Is it?
Yeah. So then when it's time to stumble home, and you know that you don't need a vehicle, an Uber, or any other assistance other than making it on your own 2 feet, you're in good shape.
Well, if you have a really cool place that's walking distance from your home, then you should absolutely take advantage of that. Are those like homemade Jenga blocks and stuff?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, I'm down for that.
Yep, there you go. So we're just getting it rolling. And if you missed it, everyone but Patrick Creighton had a good time last night if you watched Major League Baseball, because everyone was completely motivated, inspired, and taken in by the fantastic job Major League Baseball did. I don't say that often, but Major League Baseball did a fantastic job last night of really capitalizing on the synergy between the ballpark, the movie, and the game itself. The intro was just off the charts. The fact that Costner came through the corn, but then the teams came through the corn, and then he threw out the first pitch. It was the best way possible to start this ball game. Since we investigated yesterday and found out that this was a Major League Baseball created stadium, it was pretty obvious Rob Manfred was going to say, we're not done doing these, because that stadium as a one-time only thing might have been a little spendy. But the fact that they're going to be back is also a good thing. But I thought that the game could not have been, if it was scripted in Hollywood, it could not have gone any better than the way it did last night.
You don't have to be a huge fan of the movie to appreciate,
like yourself,
what went down last time. And, you know, baseball usually finds ways to screw things up. Maybe they got this one right.
I agree.
The ratings for this game, from what I've heard, are going to be huge. And anything that gets more eyeballs on baseball, especially when you've got, you know, the Yankees are a premier team in baseball, even if you hate them, which I do. The White Sox are an up-and-coming team in baseball with a lot of great young players. You got a really exciting game with a walk-off finish. Screw the Yankees, love that. And you had
it does hurt the Astros, as I told you.
It does, but they'll lose other games. I'm not worried about that.
All right.
You got a great aesthetic game that was a great game in and of itself. And you got a ton of eyeballs on your sport. You got a lot of attention to your sport. Yeah, you know what? This should become like the Winter Classic in the NHL.
Agreed.
Do this every year.
And the takeaways, guys, it's not just how the game played out and the fact that the White Sox were in control early, the Yankees regained control late, the White Sox win it with a walk-off. Those things were all great, and that is something you can't control because that's the game itself. But the elements within the game, the fact that Hendricks actually put a mic on from the bullpen during the game prior to him imploding in the game, which normally players don't do, was really cool. And the biggest, best takeaway for me the whole night, and it showed you what kind of an impact this game can have, Costner, when you normally have a guest on, goes a half inning. And if that half inning goes quickly, he and his people are like, yep, so too bad, so sad, appreciate you guys having us on, we got to go. He not only stayed for a second half inning, He was there for almost three innings, and the stories that he told and how engaged he was in every discussion about everything that was going on and all the little idiosyncrasies from the movie made it even that much better. I was just – I couldn't turn it off after that.
You were fortunate in that, you know, the guy who – you know, Kevin Costner, who's, you know, the main character in Field of Dreams, is a legit – genuine baseball fan, mm-hmm. and a guy who appreciates the history of baseball, maybe even a guy who you could call a baseball historian. So to have a guy who's that engaged, a lot of times when you get a guest on, they're really not engaged. They're promoting whatever they're promoting, or they were asked to come up, or maybe they've got, you know, some small thing. Maybe it's one particular team they have an interest in. Costner has a love for baseball in and of itself. And, yeah, that did lend a lot to the broadcast. I thought Fox did a really good job with the
too.
Broadcast.
You know what? From the way the guys were dressed to the way that the people in that were doing the manual scoreboards of the kids and everything were wearing the overalls and the paperboy hats and all of that kind of stuff, to the fact that when you get down to it, and as I mentioned, normally the guys that talk, if they're actual active players on a roster, they're only talking because they're pitchers that aren't going to pitch and not going to be in the ballgame that night. That was what Gerrit Cole did, and he couldn't have been any better either about talking about he had been down. We all know that he had tested positive for COVID, and he had said just being here, being in this environment, feeling all of this has kind of rejuvenated him even more. But to say that a guy that's going to end up probably being in the ballgame later on in a high-leverage situation or a fairly high-leverage situation, and he's talking to, and he's been a guy all along that said, I went on the tour of the house. I did everything I could possibly do, and I didn't want to miss a thing when I was here. That just builds up not just the Field of Dreams experience, but it's really good for the game of baseball.
Here is something, and I know you'll love this.
Yes, please.
So I'm watching the game last night after I get my after I pick up the kids from school.
Yep.
And, you know, it's probably like the sixth inning or so. And my son says to me, Dad, why do they keep calling it the Field of Dreams game? Now, my son's 16, so he's never seen the movie. He doesn't understand. The movie was out before he was born.
Well, he's not going to see it because you crap on it all
the time. Hold on. All right. So he said to me, why? And I was explaining to him about how there was a movie called Field of Dreams and what it was about and how, you know, it has like a big baseball cult following and how they've kind of made this game, and it's right there. It's by the house where the original field was. It's right, kind of like next to it. And he's like, Dad, can we watch that movie this weekend?
Nice.
And I said, sure. So we are going to watch it.
Don't you poop on it.
I don't do that with my kids. I don't do that really when I'm watching it with anybody.
Only
I
with us?
Never spoil. Well, you've seen it. It's
well, Aaron,
not a spoiler
we're not his kids,
for you.
But at least he'll poop on it with
us. You're not a kid. You've seen it. It's not a spoiler for you. But I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to try to influence their feelings about it. I let them watch the movie. And if they ask questions, I answer the questions they have. And I let them make their own decisions because I want them to decide whether they like it on their own.
I will say this, too. Kevin Costner did so much for me last night that he didn't have to, but they aired the press conference and the interview in which we referenced yesterday, Have a Catch. People associate that with Midwest because it's Iowa. False. And I was here to make sure that everybody knew. We never said that. Costner said last night, and it was fantastic audio, that he had to have an in-depth discussion with the director of the film because he had never heard the expression before, and he said to him hearing it was like nails on a chalkboard. At the end of the day, he let the director win out, and the director said it was an East Coast thing. You can verify as well as anybody. I have never heard that term used before, but that's the term used in the movie. And if that's the only negative, and the fact that Costner was very freewheeling and being able to say openly, I hated it. I love that.
You guys never used the term have a catch, play catch?
Play catch, yes. He said, that's what everybody says. Let's go play catch. We never said, let's go have a catch.
We use them kind of interchangeably. It wasn't
so you
like
used
one
have
of
have a catch?
Yeah.
Okay. Because people associated with the Midwest Costner said it was an East Coast thing as indicated by the director who was very persistent in saying he wanted that line to stay the way it was in the film. But almost everybody else said, no matter what you said and what the line is, the fact is that's the one that gets you every single time. And the fact that when you look back, the thing that I always remembered was I always took for granted playing catch with my dad. I never really – and I always thought it was just about baseball. And it wasn't until he was gone that I thought back at all those times and wanted that one more time so that I could figure out that it was more about life than it was about baseball. And sure, it had baseball implications, and he was always worried about and trying to help me with things in my game. But there were so many more discussions and so many more concrete things that resonate with me today because of the fact that those catches happened.
Now, when you played catch, was it just, you know, throwing the ball, or did one of you get down like a catcher and the other one start to pitch? Or like, how did you guys do it? Because, you know, depending on, like, we would start out just like short toss, you keep taking steps back, make right. it turn into a long toss, and then after that, then you'd almost kind of like let the other guy like warm up as a pitcher, and one guy would get down and catch, and you weren't throwing like crazy breaking stuff. You just throw fastballs. And
you touch on a hot button or a sore subject in some ways. It would have been more for him than for me. But yeah, because I mean, I was a position player, but I was also a pitcher. And so my dad would always focus on the pitching aspects and what he wanted me to work on. And eventually, like you said, we'd get loose, and then he would start to get down and do a squat, and he'd want me to throw. Well, there was a massive age difference. I was a mistake in a lot of, you know, according to my parents, depending on you look at the ages of my sisters, a 17-year difference for me. And so as I got into high school, he was persistent about doing this, and I was more and more reluctant until the day that he started getting on my ass about not throwing it hard enough. And if he was going to teach me something, I had to literally do what I was doing on the mound, and I had to throw it. And I kept saying, you're not padded up, you shouldn't do that, you're not wearing a cup, whatever the case may be. He got to the point where he pushed the button, so I was like, all right, you want one? Here it comes. I wound up and let one fly, didn't get the glove up in time. I want to think it hit him in the stomach. I think it hit him lower, and I know that we never had the discussion again.
It's kind of unfortunate and almost...
I can't laugh. I can chuckle now. If you were in that situation in the moment, it was the most uncomfortable situation you could ever be in.
I can see that. You know, you just drilled dad in the jewels.
Yep.
And he's been riding your ass. And yep. You just, he said, give it to me as hard as you
and
got.
And it was a strike.
And you did. And you nailed him. And
did my job, dad. Just did it too well.
At that point, I think he understood, okay, you're doing it the right way.
Yep. Yep, couldn't laugh, walked in the house. Mom said, what happened? I said, you'll have to ask him.
I'll be in a few minutes.
And it was a rubber-coated hardball.
Oh.
That cannot feel good. All right, we're just getting the show started. Lots to get to aside from the Field of Dreams. You guys want to chime in, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call that number, text that number. If you text it, put your name on it so we can talk directly to you. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch, hit us up on Twitter. We'd love to have you a part of the conversation. We're back with a whole lot more, but before we get to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey and his company do just outstanding work in the Houston area. And the thing that they pride themselves on is they're not going to be like storm chasers or these shoddy roof companies, get your money up front, hard to get a hold of, don't do great work, and they never finish the job. That's not what they do. Fitz Roofing uses the best warranties and the best products, but they also do the best job that get the best ratings on every single social media account and Better Business Bureau that you want to check. They take care of their customers, and it starts with a free no-obligation inspection. It costs you absolutely nothing. All you do is call them, 832-521-3001. They come to you. They tell you what they can do. You decide if you want them to come back, and if you do, they do fantastic work, and they take care of you every step of the way. You can check them out as well at FITZroofing.com, but I encourage you to call them. Everything from home repairs and putting up a new fence in your yard to all the roof repairs for your business or your house, there's only one place to call. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from East End Backyard, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, here we go. Officially full-blown getting into the show as we are here at the East End Backyard in honor of Fred Fowler. Oh, look, it's Angel Food Cake, all wrapped into one, as our first loyal listener has shown up to show their love for everyone but some of us. As we get this party started, and as we said, it's going to go all the way, probably all night long, but the Blitzers as they are called, will be here in large droves, I would assume. Aaron is here, of course. It's going to be Fred and Friends on steroids, as everybody is going to be stopping by to show their love for Fred in his last full show here on the network, on the ESPN 97.5 network. So we want to make sure we do this the right way. There's going to be a lot of pop-ins, audio, people that Fred has touched in one way or another, and hopefully appropriately. So we look forward to everybody showing up and having a good time today. And this is the way it's supposed to be done with everybody here from the station going to be a part of the festivities, hopefully. So game last night was good. I was flipping back and forth between the Field of Dreams and the Rockets Summer League game. And the minute that Jalen Green came up hobbling, I knew the evening was over for me watching. I still watched a little, but I knew pretty quickly that the evening was not going to end well for your Houston Rockets.
Now, when you saw that, your first reaction was?
Get him out, sit him down, don't need to see him again.
I would say don't need to see him again for Summer League.
And that's beneficial. Not unofficially official. So after the game, they said they're going to do, for just precautionary purposes, they're going to do an MRI. But then the word started to trickle out that it looks like they're going to shut him down for the rest of at least the Vegas Summer League, which is a very wise, smart thing to do. You've seen enough of him. What was interesting to me, two takeaways, Şengün still is playing his tail off. And he didn't get every call last night. And, of course, he can't say what he'd like to say to the officials, but he can in another language. But I liked his fire and tenacity. I liked the fact that he never eased up or gave up. But I saw the Josh Christopher that I had seen in college last night. And I don't know if it was because Jalen Green wasn't on the floor, but I saw him with blinders on, trying to do too much with the ball, losing it, turning it over. So that's why I always tell everybody, take everything in the Summer League with a grain of salt. Because one night the player might look like an All-American, and the next night it looks like there's exactly every reason why they are in the Summer League.
Well, I think when it comes to Christopher, I think we all kind of knew there was going to be some project with his offense. And he was a guy who they liked. They talked about him on draft night as being a guy with a high motor, and he can play defense on multiple positions and a lot of athleticism and things like that. He clearly did not shoot the ball well from beyond the arc last night. But I think we knew his offense is going to be a work in progress. Garuba got in the game last night, had some boards, didn't hit any shots. It was his first day. He just got off a flight. I wasn't even sure he would play. But I think the next game we'll get to see some more of them. Şengün had 10 boards and another block.
I love that guy.
I love his he's so much more athletic than what I usually expect from a true big guy who comes from Europe.
Well, what I also liked about him too was if he got his stuff blocked, he didn't just quit on it and look at the official and try and beg for a call. He kept playing. He went back after the ball. He went with some tenacity to say, you may have got me the first time, this won't be the last time you see me. And then he was also very quick on the other end to aggressively go after blocking shots and point out to the official, even with no verbal communication, essentially, give it to me down there if you're going to call it down here. And I liked all those things. I just like the way he plays the game, especially at his age. He's mature beyond his years. But you can tell for a guy that is still probably going to fill out and develop a little bit more as he's only 19, he has not just the footwork and the touch that people have been talking about. He has what you can he knows how to use his body, and he's very aggressive in the way he plays the game, and I like that. I like all of the above.
Isn't that part of, like, I guess our preconceived notions about European centers? They're not very athletic. They're very skilled. They're fundamentally sound. They're usually very good shooters, very good passers, but they're not super athletic. They're not big-time defenders. He is all of those things.
Yeah.
And so when I say he isn't your, quote, typical European center, I don't just mean, hey, he's athletic and, you know, he can go to the rim and stuff. He plays defense with intensity. He wants to block that shot. And as you mentioned, high motor, both ends, he's ready to go.
Where, you know, a lot of people trying to make comparisons. and a lot of people are over the top. But I think the one European center that has Rockets mileage that people aren't looking at hard enough in terms of from an offensive perspective, because of his footwork, because of his head and shoulder fakes, he's got a lot of Luis Scola in the fact that he can score in the low block in a multitude of ways. A lot of times European centers are told, get your fanny on the block. If you can develop a jump hook in the lane and a jump hook to the baseline, that's all you basically need. Now just rebound your ass off and do what we tell you to do. But Scola had the up and under. Scola had so many different ways he could beat you. And you've seen glimpses of so many different moves in his repertoire that are only going to get better with time. That's what really impresses me the most. This kid is so polished for such a young age. And a lot, like I said, a lot of European centers, they're going to focus on one or two moves and then just make sure you do what you need to do as a big just to kind of get through. This kid's got a repertoire on both ends of the floor. He's got some bounce in his step. He's smart when he needs to stay on a state, keep his feet. Don't give up the room and the real estate. I like that as much as anything, is the fact that he's very polished for his age, and he has more than a couple of moves.
No, I really like Şengün. I think, you know, like I said, I thought it was a good trade when they made it on draft day because of all the protections on the draft picks they're giving up.
Right.
But I really liked that deal, and every time you watch him play, you like the deal more and more. Now, how much from last night when it comes to Christopher, and you mentioned he was – focusing on his own shot, and he wasn't hitting them. But he was focusing on his own shot as opposed to necessarily getting his teammates involved. How many, quote, teachable items from that game for you are there when it comes to him? I guess what would be the one or the two biggest things that you'd focus on that you want him to work on as you get into the next couple of games?
Şengün?
No, for Christopher.
For Christopher. I think a lot of different things. I think it starts with ball safety, ball control. I mean, you know what? If you're going to be the guy with the ball in your hands, you can't be the guy that also gives it up and gives it to the other team. What I saw was dribbling into a lot of double teams. Not getting the ball moving and popping around once you cross half court quick enough. And by the time you realize it's time to do that, there's two guys collapsing on you. And either they poke the ball away or you get caught in the air. And then a lot of his shot selection's really bad. I think that what he really has to work on, too, and especially when you start getting out of summer league and start getting into camp, when you're going to worry about veterans that aren't going to be tolerating that, when you're going to worry about other guys that need the ball in their hands, a la Jalen Green, but also Kevin Porter Jr., Christian Wood's not going to sit back and watch you do those kind of things when he's busting his tail to get open on the elbow or in the block. John Wall's obviously not going to tolerate any of it, neither is Eric Gordon. I think those are the things, if he wants to see any kind of significant time on the floor in minutes when it matters, those are the things he's got to work on.
Now, Usman Garuba, we mentioned he played 12 minutes. Yeah. I was surprised that he played since he'd just gotten off a plane. I know it's not necessarily a whole lot that you can say, all right, well, the guy just got off a plane and he played a few minutes and his legs were probably shot. What are you looking for the next time they play and maybe he gets a little bit more minutes and he's a little bit more rested? What are you looking for when you watch him play?
Well, I want to know, a lot of times, we know he doesn't have a lot of offense. I know he can play defense, but who can he defend? So I want to see him on wings. I want to see him on smaller players. I want to see him on bigger players because we know Silas likes to play small, and a lot of times he goes with a undersized center and they want to run. So I want to see him do those things defensively, but I already know he's a pretty good lockdown defender. It's just the adjustment between the way the whistle blows in the NBA and the European game. Then I want to see his mechanics offensively consistently, because if it's a Markel Fultz situation or a Lonzo Ball situation, you're talking about a full rehaul rebuild at some point. If he's got good fundamentals, if the elbow stays in, if he puts his hand in the cookie jar, if he gets his rhythm off the bounce when he's getting ready to take his jump shot, then it's just a matter of having the Rockets coaches work with him on the repetition to get comfortable and feel confident shooting particularly the three, which is going to be wide open when they start doubling and closing down the paint on the amount of guys that could penetrate for the Rockets. And then offense, you know, as he takes it off the bounce, what can he do when he gets in the air? What can he do when he gets ahead of steam? But the most important things to me are going to be the mechanics of his shot, and then basically how comfortable he feels when he's pulling it, so that the coaches can work with him.
Now, when we get into these games and you see, you know, look, Kenyon Martin Jr. is playing 26 minutes. Jayshon Tate put a couple of minutes. Are you overly concerned about what you see from those guys? Is this just those guys getting kind of like summer work in, per se? Or is there stuff that you need them to build on, et cetera?
I've seen enough of Jayshon Tate. He made first-team all-rookie. You know that he can play against the real NBA competition on a night-in, night-out basis, do what needs to be done. I think Amani Brooks is the same thing. He got in late, but when he got into the season, he showed he can shoot the jump shot. He can get his shot off. You don't need to see anything more of him either. That's why I don't need to see Kevin Porter Jr. If I want to see Kevin Porter Jr., I want to see him playing in these summer leagues against NBA competition because that's where he's going to get better. But the primary focus of summer league for me are all the young kids. Is there someone undrafted or someone that's sitting there from the G League that might be able to make a difference? And then those four kids, and obviously not with Green anymore, but we've seen enough of Green as well. Those three kids otherwise, I just want to see how they develop, what they're working on while they're there, so they can get kind of a head start to training camp so that they're ready when it matters.
Hey, we're out at East End Backyard as we say goodbye to the Falcon today, the end of an era here at ESPN 97.5. So make sure you make your way down here. Of course, we're on 1 to 4, Joel and I with the press box, and Fred will be here with Jerry Bowe and I'm sure a host of other guests from 4 to 7. Aaron's going to be out here all day long, so make sure you come on down, check out everything we've got. We've got a ton of giveaways to give away later on. And Joel, coming up next, I want to ask you a little bit about some things that are going down on Kirby as more, and now that people have had a day to digest things going on with Deshaun Watson and the brief comments that he made, there sure are a lot of very interesting takes on it. I want to, now that it's 24 hours later, let's get your perspective on this one more time. It's the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
Do you ever wonder what ESPN 97.5 hosts talk about during the breaks? Well, now we have your f***ing answer.
I don't know why you got to do it with the FN. All you got to do is say your must.
Just go to twitch.tv/ESPN975 for exclusive uncensored content.
Can you hear Muffet for me?
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East End Backyard. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Head back on the box for the last day. We call it that, I guess. So we're going to have some fun with it. We're out here at the east end of downtown at the backyard, where it is a haunt of one Fred Fowler as we bid final farewell to the everyday appearances of Fred Fowler on the afternoon show. He will still be around. He still will be joining all the shows on the network. But end of an era, as Patrick said so gracefully earlier in the show, and eloquently, I might add. But we have moved into the meat and potatoes part of the program. By the way, the promo team is here. Alex basically is using two hands today instead of one, so there's just double the effort being put forth to make sure you have a chance to win prizes, you get some freebies, and you have a promo team that can be accessible to you while we are here all the way through 7 o'clock. Pat, you had questions. I hope to have answers. What's on your mind?
Well, I do want to ask you some stuff about the Texans, but you just kind of mentioned something.
I did.
Today's the last day of the Press Box.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on Monday. You and Jeremy Branham, the Killer Bees, so this will be a new show for you. You'll be on from 12 to 3, so a little bit change in the time slot. But you and I have been, you know, working on here close about the same amount of time. You started out with the Joel Blank Show, mm-hmm. and you'd have rotating guests.
Guest hosts.
Yeah, rotating guest co-host.
Right.
So, you know, you had Keenan McCardle, you had Travis Johnson, you had Barry Laminack, and then ultimately you and Barry went on to do The Usual Suspects, and, you know, that show had a lot of popularity, and then COVID hit and a whole bunch of changes came. Eventually you and Charlie paired up to do The Press Box. Then some more changes came, and they split you guys up, and you kept the name The Press Box. And it's been, you know, it's been you and Nick for a long time, and you and I have been doing it for the last 2 weeks. Now you're going into the Killer Bees, almost like your next chapter, your thoughts on all the different shows that you've been a part of, and you know, is there anything to it for you leaving one show behind and moving on to the next one?
I mean, first of all, the way you described it sounds like I'm like manure or fertilizer, and I just get spread out all over the place.
You're highly desired.
You know, as long as everything that I get spread to grows, I think that's probably a positive. Look, it's been fun, and it's amazing that I already have this many chapters in this novel. But I think that as the relationships that I've built along the way have been ones that'll be there for a lifetime, and that's in a short period of time. But that's because of the quality of people that I've come across. And this new chapter is something that you just have to embrace, and you got to move forward. I had never met Jeremy before I was paired with Jeremy. We did some dry runs. He's a really good dude. So I'm looking forward to all that show brings. It's going to be a different element for the listeners as well, because they have me changing positions too, from show host to more of the B chair, the analyst chair. So we're going to roll through that. We're going to get to know each other and hopefully, you know, develop another relationship, another friendship that's going to be there for a lifetime. So the good news is, for the most part, you guys aren't all going away, and I'm going to see you guys on a regular basis, and I'm going to call on you guys when there's opportunities to either fill in, be a part of the program, or do whatever you guys can do to be with me, because I want to be surrounded by the best people, and that's who we got, from the producers to the talent, and like I said, and all the people that I've worked with in the past.
You know, it's about, I guess, about 5 years now that I've known you, and you and I have gotten to become friends. And I've known Jeremy almost 8 years, and he and I have been friends for a long time. And I'm happy for your success. I'm happy for his success, and I'm very interested to see you guys work together. I think highly of both of you, and I'm looking forward to checking out your guys' new show. Now let's get into the Houston Texans.
Let's do it.
So yesterday, all the buzz about, hey, Deshaun made his little two-sentence comment to being filmed, which every member of the Texans is filmed, but mm-hmm. And it's the first time Deshaun ever had gripe about it. I think we all know why. But over the last 24 hours, there seems to be like factioning. Either you are on the side of, well, why hasn't the league or the Texans just addressed this and sent him away to, you know, hey, why don't you just stay home? And we'll pay you just like you were on the exempt list or whatnot. But now there is this divide between, well, the league should do it, not the Texans, versus, well, the Texans don't need to wait for the league. They could just do it themselves. And then there is this swelling of sentiment of, this is all Deshaun's fault. He quit on the team. He should just have to suck it up and talk every day. Where are you?
You know where I'm at.
On all of these things now, I guess a day later. Do any of these things, do you see logic in any of these three things?
Well, I think the first and foremost thing is, because we're not the flagship station, because we're not trying to cover the Texans' ass, and we're trying not to sing sunshines and rainbows over everything that happens. You know, I've been preaching this for weeks. It's amazing the national media is suddenly jumping on board to say the league should have already done something. And I've used the Trevor Bauer scenario, in which just yesterday that whole keep stay away from baseball mandate was extended once again for him. And I told you he's not going to play the rest of the year until that's resolved. I think the NFL should have learned from that. They should have done this before camp started. They should have said, okay, we see where your head's at. We know you don't want to get fined. You don't want to lose any money. That's cool. We don't want to be embarrassed. We don't want to do the wrong thing or have everybody paying more attention to you than they are the Houston Texans. We're going to tell you, now that you're here, you can go home. You'll get your money. And we need to just move forward with this team for this season. They didn't do that. It's just like what we talked about with the J.J. Watt situation. They should have traded him when they could have gotten a resource back. A second-round pick, a third-round pick, whatever the case may be. They could have gotten that. But you know what? They were so hell-bent on how much of a beating that they thought they were going to take from their fan base, because they traded away the legend. They traded away one of their favorites, a fan favorite, a Houston favorite in J.J. Watt, that they actually avoided trading him so that they could make a wink-wink handshake deal with him, so that if he would say that he had asked to be released or traded, they would let him basically walk and go anywhere he wanted to go, because it meant that much to them. That's the kind of franchise we're dealing with. That's why they're the laughingstock of the NFL on a daily basis. That's why, because they don't get it. They haven't, they won't, And I think ever since Bob McNair passed away and the changes that they've made in the front office, until they make more changes, I don't know that they ever will get it.
You know, it's funny you mention because yesterday Fred and I were having a conversation. I said, you know, if Bob McNair were still here, a lot of this nonsense would not be going on because Bob was in charge. There was never a time where you said, all right, well, you know, the Texans are in complete disarray. Nobody's ever going to put their foot down. Bob McNair was in charge, and when he had to put his foot down, he was not afraid to do so. It does seem like Cal is not in charge. And I'm not just talking about the Deshaun stuff, but the whole, you know, hey, we're going to try to, you know, axe training camp early so we can get the media out of here so they'll stop filming Deshaun and they'll stop talking about Deshaun and we won't have to answer as many questions about Deshaun in direct violation of a very clear NFL rule. It's like how could you not know this is the rule? I feel like if Bob McNair were still here, that would not be going on. And because Cal doesn't seem to exert the same influence or be willing to exert the same influence, there's a lot of just slop in the pool that nobody really seems to be all that worried about.
And that's the bigger issue. I mean, the fact that you have a new coach, you have a new general manager, they don't need these kind of distractions. I don't care how involved Castério and Easterby and Cully are in terms of being visible to the media and on the practice field and what they're doing, not doing, as long as they're doing their jobs for this season. But it's hard to focus on their jobs for this season when the one big distraction that's not going to be available, I don't think, for this entire season, and it would be interesting to force the NFL's hand and say, hey, he's practicing full board as the number one that right now, and our plan is to have him ready for game one. Whether that was true or not, just the way they gave you the smoke screen to try and get practice closed, if they put that narrative out there to see how quickly the NFL, just like the NFL, jumped in and said, oh, no, you don't, I'd love to see if the NFL would jump right in and say, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Because now with all these things pending over his head and now there's a chance he might play and it's a really bad look for the league to know that he might be out there and representing a franchise and a league when we don't know the outcome of all these court cases, let's talk. Because I think I don't know that it would have any kind of difference, but as bunch of a bumbling bunch of buffoons as we got on Kirby, we got some in the NFL office too because they haven't handled this thing well at all.
No, and there are a handful of different things that could be done. And at some point, one of them is going to have to be done because you can't imagine they're going to go into the season with all of this still hanging over their head. So I'll ask you about that when we come back. This is the Press Box. We're live at East End Backyard as we say goodbye to the Falcon today. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East End Backyard. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, back on the box. You heard the man with a plan. That means all the way through 7 o'clock tonight and probably, a little bit later than that as we celebrate Fred Fowler at the East End Backyard as we're having a good time here. They normally don't open up till 4. They've made special arrangements. Evidently, the garbage trucks and the trains have not been respectful of our hours. But we don't care because the show must go on, and that's what we're going to do. We were talking some Texans before the break. Pat Creighton and myself, Aaron Raybould here keeping us on the air and always a willing participant to chime into a discussion. Tyler Scott back at the station. He won't because he doesn't. Talking Texans, boys, I don't know if you saw the Sports Illustrated article that came out today. But they caught up with two of the ladies that have filed some sort of a court issue with Deshaun Watson that are masseuses. After I read the article and certain aspects of it, whether it was the slant that Sports Illustrated wanted you to take away from it or just the obvious when you compare how the investigation has gone when HPD talked to the women and when the league representatives talked to the women, it was pretty cut and dried that there were some undertones that was a little bit surprising to me.
Now, the piece in SI is written by Jenny Vrentis. Jenny Vrentis is a very good reporter.
Okay.
She is not somebody who is just slinging it against the wall to see what sticks. She is a highly reputable reporter and has been for many years. And she described two of the – one of them was Ashley Solis, who I think was the first person to file against Deshaun. And then there was another one who was, I guess, one of the earlier one, Lauren Baxley, who's the other one that she spoke with. And they talked about their experience meeting with Lisa Friel and the NFL. Now, keep in mind, Lisa Friel cut her teeth in the Manhattan AD's office prosecuting sex crimes. This is her background. And Baxley specifically said that she felt she didn't like the way that she was interviewed by Friel and by the NFL's office. She felt that they were antagonizing and patronizing, and that they were victim-blaming her. Those are some of the quotes that were used. They asked her about like the kind of clothes that she was wearing, and she took it as a direct insult as opposed to, you know, they're trying, you know, what has Deshaun said? What has she said? You're trying to gather information. She didn't take it as information. She took it as that they are basically trying to come at her and say, well, how much are you to blame for this? Now, obviously, I wasn't there and I didn't see or hear the interview, but they made a very pointed difference to the way they were treated by HPD versus the way they were treated by the NFL.
Well, even in the fact that both ladies said they were allowed to finish their statements. They were allowed to finish their thoughts and their statements in every question that they were asked when they were asked by HPD. When they were asked by the NFL representatives, both females, they were cut off constantly. There were follow-up questions thrown at them quickly. And they felt like almost leading a witness, like they were trying to be led in a direction that was basically protecting Deshaun Watson.
And
that's surprising to me.
From what we know of the NFL and of Lisa Friel, I mean, this is the same woman who, when the league conducted its investigation into Ezekiel Elliott,
right,
and its lead investigator, who was a female, its lead investigator said, hey, we have found that the woman accusing Ezekiel Elliott has told just lie upon lie upon lie. She's admitted to the lies. She's admitted to getting other people to try to lie for her. She's asked them. We interviewed those people. They said that they wouldn't lie for her, but she did ask them, and they didn't recommend a suspension. Lisa Friel told Roger Goodell to throw that report in the garbage and suspend Ezekiel Elliott for 6 games, and they did. And that's why Jerry Jones went absolutely insane. And we got Jerry versus Roger and all the court cases and everything. And it got very ugly between the Cowboys and the league office for a while because Lisa Friel wanted to send a message. They were going to be tough on domestic violence and that type of stuff right from the get-go. To now come full circle and, well, we're going to blame the victim and we're trying to protect Deshaun. It does seem like a very opposite portrayal of Lisa Friel in the NFL office based on their previous work and their previous experiences, what they've done in the past, to now. Do you have to take a report like this with some grain of salt and say, this is their perception of how they were treated, not necessarily 100% accurate of how they were treated, but their perception? Because this is the exact opposite of what we know about the league in the past.
Well, the thing that I take away from this is that with both women being interviewed multiple times, they might be on the defensive, but they've been asked the same questions enough, and they've probably been briefed by their legal counsel enough that they can differentiate between a legit, fair question, trying to get an honest answer so that they can get to the bottom of things, and maybe a question with a purpose, or questions with a purpose, whether you're leading the witness or not. It's trying to get the kind of answer that you are looking for whatever reason. And I think from the NFL's perspective, they've had a lot of bad looks recently. You mentioned in one you and I always go back to is the Ezekiel Elliott case. But there have been plenty of others from Ray Rice, more in the past, so some of the more to some of the more recent issues that have come up recently. Alden Smith just getting released for off-the-field antics, et cetera. They don't want any more bad looks for the league. So I think that, we know that they're employed by the league. We know what they used to do in the court system, but we now know as employees of the league, they're following the direction of the commissioner's office, the PR staff, and everybody that works for the NFL. And maybe the NFL is trying to do a little quick fix, a little first aid, a little patchwork so that they can avoid any more of these black eyes for the league, for the teams, and the players.
If you go back to the Ray Rice situation, remember the league suspended him for 2 games. And this was before the video came out and a lot of the details came out. And the Ray Rice case is really that's kind of the benchmark for the NFL's domestic violence policies and whatnot. This was like, that case is basically ground zero for everything they've done since. Later on, the video would surface, and the video was ugly. And the league then went back to try to suspend him more, and they couldn't because they'd already suspended him for it. So the NFLPA said, wait, you can't suspend him twice for the same offense. How much is the NFL being slow about how, you know, what they're going to do with Deshaun Watson? How much of that do you think plays into it? They don't want to make a judgment, then find out later on down the road, oh, it was 10 times worse than what we thought it was, but we'd already rendered judgment.
Yeah, you got to have your ducks in a row, and you've got to have every bit of information on the table before you pass any appropriate judgment once and for all. Because when you think about it, for every Ray Rice, there was a Kareem Hunt. For every Kareem Hunt, there was a Tyreek Hill. And we can go on and on. And so the same situations pop up, and then the same variables are inevitably brought up, spaced out. And you remember the same thing happened with Kareem Hunt. The allegation surfaced, then there was video, and then they started to do the investigation further. Then they were trying to gather more information. They were talking to more witnesses. With Tyreek Hill, remember the audio came out. His significant other first put the phone messages out, but then the kid was hurt. But then they had more messages. But then was it really agreed upon? And then, you know, the NFL's trying to sort through all of it. But the main takeaway is this isn't the first go-round for all of these people involved. And possibly at a certain point they're like, hey, this is a really, really bad look for our league and our teams. Maybe, just maybe, we should be doing a little bit more for the protection of our players and our league, as opposed to just focusing on, you know, they're not in the court system anymore. They're not doing this for right and wrong, for legality standpoint. They're doing it for representation in their league and having the right to play or be suspended or not, and all these other things.
This brings us to the next part of the discussion, which is, where is the line between protecting the victims and then protecting the player? I want to ask you about that next when we come back. It's the Press Box live from East End Backyard in East in where we're on the East End. We're really on the East
Edo,
End
baby.
For me.
Edo.
Are we past Edo?
Did you see this? Did you see the sign right there that says Edo? That's where we're
at. That's just the name of the storage company.
Okay.
That's cheating.
All right. Well, we're in Edo, Pat.
We're in Edo as we say goodbye to Fred Fowler today on ESPN 975.
Research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!